Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
So we're starting now.
Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about the 24th serial, the 6th serial of Season 3, The Celestial Toymaker, which consists of 4 episodes, The Celestial Toy Room, The Hall of Dolls, The Dancing Floor, and The Final Test. And that aired from April 2nd, 1966 to April 23rd, 1966. First 3 episodes are missing, the last one exists, and that has been an episode of Joe Facts.
Joe Facts!
That crowing noise indicates that today we have a special guest, special returning guest for his third or fourth.
I mean, I retain no information. I don't know why you're looking at me.
Third or fourth episode?
It's the Christmas special canon.
The Christmas special is canon.
Canon is canon.
Yeah, everything's canon, yeah.
In that case, this is my fourth.
Wait, so we're not counting the fanfic? All right, moving on.
Wait, I have an important question.
Yes?
Chris, can we get you to what?
Way to drop his name before we even introduce him.
Well, you were taken for ages.
Well, I was just going to say, this is Mr. Christopher LeBron Cherry.
You keep saying that's
his
name.
See, you spoiled that joke, Tony. That could have been really
funny.
Yeah,
I spoiled it. It started off life perfectly great.
That was something, Tony asked me what your middle name was, and I had no idea, so I just said, actually, I do know, you told me once, but I've forgotten, so I just said LeBron.
No, I didn't ask you. You just offered that information up.
That sounds like me.
I was going to ask, can we get you saying Joe Facts? Can we record that so that we can play it in every episode?
Right now?
Yeah.
All right. Joe Facts! No, that was terrible. Don't use that one. Joe Facts! That was terrible. Use that one.
Okay.
Fantastic. My life is complete now.
So, Chris, what you been up to?
Oh, just wrap production on a school thing. It was a crazy week. Shot a short film. Jonathan Frakes directed it. It was a whole thing. But that's not what the audience is here to listen to.
No, they are. I'm excited. Did you get to meet Jonathan Frakes and shit?
Yeah. One of the coolest experiences of my life is that I was sort of one of the main writers on the script. So I ended up in like the first couple of days talking with him a lot about story and about our story, you know, which was really fun. So it was really fun to like talk with Jonathan Frakes about like story and have him. Yeah, it was great. And we talked like other stuff, and we talked about The Martian and the movie, not just someone from Mars.
So
I did not.
I wasn't gonna ask that. That's not what I was gonna say. But still,
I know. But I'm going to mention it. I did not. Okay, Jonathan Frakes has done a lot of things. He is an accomplished television and film director of note. He starred for 7 seasons as Commander William T. Riker on Star Trek The Next Generation. He also directed a film called Clockstoppers. This film has a scene that drives Joe bonkers. Just bonkers. Because it's about slowing down time, but the slowing down of time is inconsistent, and there is like nothing that Joe hates more in the universe than inconsistent time travel of any form. Which, frankly, considering we live in a world of poverty and racism and war, that makes you a terrible person. Okay, but this is true. I didn't mention Clockstoppers to him at all. But, like, one of the last things that we did was that since the MacGuffin of our short film, the plot device, the thing that everyone's after, is this journal. And we had this prop journal. And everyone in the crew like signed it and like had a page where they wrote something. And my friend Connor like, he wrote this little note, like, thanking him for everything, and wrote, as a P.S., I've seen Clock Stoppers 6 times.
I will grant him, the movie is fun. It's good. There's only one scene that bothered me. One sole scene. Okay. So,
are you...
Do you want me to explain what my problem is with it?
I mean, like, you ask that question, like, there's an answer I can give that will stop it.
I won't go into it if it's too nerdy.
I mean, we're in the middle of a podcast where we discuss at length episodes of Doctor Who from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go from here. Like, I...
All right. So here's what it is. So, okay, so the main character of the film has a clock that can stop time or significantly slow it down. So he can go around and move shit and be like, ha, ah, stuff's moved once time starts back up. That's all cool. That all works. But later in the film, there's a scene where a friend of theirs is like a DJ, I believe, who is not doing too great at this club. So the main character and this, the love interest, I don't remember her name. I don't remember either of them's name, really. But anyway, they both stop time, and together they manipulate him to do things, including at one point, he's sort of like breakdancing. He's like spinning on his head.
Well, he's not.
Well, they're making him spin on his head, and they just flip him up and spin him around on his head. And then it cuts to real time, and he's spinning on his head pretty much at the exact same speed that they were spinning him in stop time. But really, he should be spinning so fast. Oh, and also, they were standing there holding him and spinning him in the same spot. They would have been there long enough to be visible.
Basically, for a scene, it stops being like a time-stopping thing and just becomes an invisibility cloak.
Exactly. And that's my problem, Joe, with Clock Stoppers.
What year did this movie come out?
I don't know, 90-something?
Coincidentally, that is how many times I have heard this exact rant.
Tony, what would you have done if this movie had come out in the year 2?
I've been really disappointed with all of my life choices.
Yeah, but how exciting would that have been? That movie was around in the year 2.
Year 2 is the Harold Ramis sequel no one was clamoring for.
Oh.
2002. It was the year 2! It was 02!
If you had said 02, I'd have been really bummed.
Your joke would have been killed. So, okay, the question I was going to ask before you assumed the question that I was thinking but was going to refrain from asking... So now your buddy is with Jonathan Frakes.
Yes.
So you have the pull to get him to be a guest when we eventually do the Watchathon of Khan.
That's a good question.
Yes. By the time you get to the Watchathon of Khan, we will have worked together for like 5 years. So yeah, totally.
Is there any specific episode he wants to do? I mean, does he care? I mean, does he want to do the original series? Or does he just solely want to do, like, the Next Generation? Which would, you know, that would make sense. Or is he, like, you know, going way out there and is like, I want to do Enterprise?
He's in the last episode of Enterprise.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The last episode of Enterprise? No joke. Okay, so this is the end of a show, right? The actual, like, last episode of a television show. So... what do you think is the best way to, like, celebrate the legacy of this particular show? Have it be about characters from a different show watching it. Like, literally, the last episode of Enterprise is, like, Riker and a couple of people from Next Generation, like, watching historical records of what happened to the Enterprise crew.
And then they don't realize it was actually a show, so it turns into Galaxy Quest?
Yeah. Oh, I got stuff.
So, the episode that we watched...
We should talk about it.
Should we?
I will say, because I was, after I watched it, I read, like, the TARDIS wiki and was, like, reading up about it. And the thing about this episode or serial or story or what have you is that there's lots of things about it that are very fascinating and notable, and none of them have to do with the story.
Exactly. That's true. Speaking of behind-the-scenes things, this is your first Reconstruction, yeah? This is the first one you've watched.
This is the first episode that's mostly, like, I've seen Reconstructed episodes before. But, like, I've never watched a serial that was, the majority of it was Reconstructions. Like, I've seen, like, ones where, like, one or two episodes. Like, I've seen The Invasion or The Web of Fear, which each have, like, two episodes Reconstructed.
I thought this was fully missing, but it was not. The last one exists. What kind of Reconstruction did you watch? I was gonna say, we watched the one that has, like, you know, subtitles across, has a, like, scrolling text across the bottom.
Yeah, that's what I watched.
Mostly still.
Yeah.
Cause I know there was one, like, when I first watched it through, originally, cause, you know, this is my second go through, the one I watched had audio narration by Peter, what's his name? Yeah, Peter Purvis. To sort of, instead of having the scrolling text, he was, like, filling in the gaps. It was from the audio CD.
Those have a interesting difference.
Yeah. Which, we'll get to that. I missed it. Did you catch it? Because I apparently wasn't
missed
paying...
it. I then, and I was like, did they edit it out?
What are you guys talking about?
And then,
about?
Like, I went back and found it, and no, they did not edit it out. It's there.
They did not edit it out. It is there.
Yeah. What? It is there. I spent a lot of time looking for it, and then thinking about what that means about me as a person.
What so, are you guys talking about?
Should we go ahead and say it?
Well, I don't this, know.
Oh, no, we should not say it.
What? Well, yeah, obviously we shouldn't say it. But, I mean, should we explain, or should we wait till we get to it in the context of the episode?
It's possible that the listener doesn't know. Let's build some tension here.
Let's build some tension.
No, I hate it.
No, it's fine. It's in episode two.
You guys know something that I don't know, and I want to know now.
Write a note for Tony, so she knows what we're talking about.
I can't write it on a piece of paper. That's just as bad.
Well, you can, like, use a euphemism.
Oh! I know,
you know
what it is now.
You know
I figured it out.
I thought you knew about it already.
Yeah, but I forgot. So episode one, though.
Yeah, let's start there. Let's start at the logical place, the beginning. The Celestial Toy Maker. Episode one, The Celestial Toy Room.
Ooh, that title had a curve at the end. A curveball I was not expecting.
See, already this show is just keeping you off your toes. Are on your toes?
No. What?
You're doing something with your toes.
Away from your toes.
Also, really quickly, talking about the version, because I was looking at my notes and remembering, like, the version, like, I did watch the reconstruction that you guys watched, where it's, like, yeah, it's the stills and the audio and then little, like, captions at the bottom. And it occurred to me while I was watching it that I was watching the exact opposite of closed captioning, where I was getting these little captions at the bottom that was telling me what was visually happening while I had the audio.
What would that be called?
Open captioning.
I'm glad you're here. Okay. We'll just scoot right past the recap. Dodo in putting on some clothes. The doctor is invisible.
What does she have in this one? It's that cool dress, right? It's
the one with all the circles on it.
Yes. Yeah.
She's wearing a mini skirt, which is like a first, apparently,
for
Doctor Who.
I'm hoping so much that she's just like in every serial in a different and somewhat inappropriate outfit. Not inappropriate,
inappropriate for the 60s mindset?
No. I mean, like, inappropriate for the adventure.
Oh.
Where it's just like, it's just whatever time she feels like.
Yeah, because, like, last serial she was wearing the Crusade shirt.
Yeah.
Even though they were, like, way in the future.
Yeah, she's just like, I'm going to wear this. I like it. I hope that happens every time. I'm very excited.
The doctor goes invisible. I have a note that says Luigi Doc. No, this is Tony writing notes, so I have no idea what she wrote. She wrote Luigi Doctor.
I did not write that. That's yours. I don't start writing till the words get really, really big. You definitely wrote Luigi Doctor.
Did I?
I didn't.
You wrote Luigi Doctor and Intangible Doctor. Then I wrote Dollhouse. Like, that's very clearly your handwriting than my handwriting.
Well, I don't know what that means. So anyway, the doctor goes invisible, and not only is he invisible, he's also intangible.
That's bad.
Yeah, he refuses to believe that it's due to the refusions from the last episode, though I don't know why.
Yeah, he's like, no, it's got nothing to do with that. It's an attack. Why?
What? Okay. What's, where are you getting this information from?
I also enjoyed that this is my first missing serial. And, like, the very beginning, it deals with the fact that they can't see the doctor. And it was just like, oh, we can't see the doctor. I'm like, well, me neither.
No one can. Just keep going. It's all right.
We see a dollhouse? God, I can't read your notes. Small clowns got life?
Yes, they are small clowns. And they get big and they become normal-sized clowns. That's, what's your question about that?
Small clowns got life.
I know. I feel like that sentence is an answer to anything.
It actually says small clowns got big.
Oh.
is what the notes say.
I don't care. I like the other thing better. It's like, imagine like someone goes to me, hey, how you doing? Small clowns got life.
Which both of those things are technically true, despite being grammatically questionable.
So the Celestial Toymaker makes them all big, right? Do we see the Celestial Toymaker at this point? My notes are unclear.
I think so.
So we can say that that's a relatively famous dude. Like, he's the only dude I've seen so far that I'm like, oh, I know that guy. I feel like he's probably most famous for being Alfred in the Batman movies from, like, Batman to Batman and Robin.
The non-Chris Nolan and Zack Snyder, like, the 90s Batman movies.
Yeah, and he was also in Top Secret, which I really enjoy. I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce his name.
Is it Michael Goff?
Goff? Or
Gaff? Michael
Goff. Michael Gambon.
So wait, that's right, he was in Top Secret?
Yeah, he played the scientist Paul Flamond.
Batman Forever is a Top Secret reunion?
Yes it is. You should know this because this is the section of the Top Secret. In the Projectionist Project, you reviewed a piece of Top Secret that was talking about him.
But Doctor Who, though. So we meet the toy maker.
So what I'm saying is...
And he wants to play games.
What I'm saying is to go to minipineapple.com, search for Top Secret, and see that scene.
He wants the doctor to play. He separates the doctor.
Well, okay, but first off, the doctor is immediately visible again. So that was kind of pointless for...
Like, well, he
becomes visible later, but like they're like, that was only a temporary thing. It's fine.
Yeah, the doctor going invisible is just setting up the fact that that's going to happen later so William Hartnell can take a vacation.
I feel like it would have been stronger if they just waited, but I guess they needed a cliffhanger, but oh well. But yeah, they get separated, right?
He separates them, and
Steven and Dodo go one place. The doctor shows up with the toy maker.
And the toy maker wants the doctor to play this puzzle game?
The Trilogic game.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. That was almost the name of this serial, was the Trilogic game.
Oh. What's the rules?
If you guys haven't seen this episode, if you have seen Rise of the Planet of the Apes, it's the thing the ape was playing at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, it's just a more fancy version of that.
It's a legit thing. It's not like, it wasn't created for this. It was like a real thing that they used in the episode. Though I think I read something like, they kind of fuck it up. Like, they don't do it exactly right. But, yeah, it's like...
they don't get to the solution the right way?
Yeah, like, they got to, like, one move, and it's like, oh, well, at that move, if you're going to get the perfect amount of moves, like, all that one side should be completely gone, but there's still some there. And also, like, the smallest one's on a odd-numbered one, and you can't do that. I don't know. I read a thing that was, like, really nerdy. So, but, yeah, it's like, you have a pyramid of slightly smaller and larger pieces, you know, because it's a pyramid, and you have to move it from one section to another one at a time, and you can't put a larger piece on top of a smaller piece.
Mm-hmm.
So you always have to put smaller pieces on top of larger pieces, but you have three spots, and you have to move all of the whole pyramid from point A to point C by moving them around. And it like takes 1,023 moves, I think?
Yeah, I believe that was the number.
Well, that's what he wants the doctor to do. Meanwhile, he shows... you put Steven inside Adam, which you're getting onto me for making references to the Projections Project.
I was waiting for that too, because I have in my notes, the third note that I have in my notes is just, release Adam!
This episode's good for fans of my stuff, so none of you.
It's good for the people recording it.
What Adam is a character that Joe created in one of his shows in the Projectionist Project.
Well, I didn't create Adam.
Oh, no, but okay.
was created by Christopher D. Bate.
Yes.
Hey, Chris, if you're listening, for a short film called Neil's New Robot, which a guy orders a robot.
Okay,
it turns out to be a very ordinary looking guy.
Yeah. What Adam is a shitty robot costume that we have made out of cardboard, which I think Josh made.
Yes, Josh made it.
Of one of our previous guests.
And from the web planet.
In the Projectionist Project, Adam always has this shitty cardboard robot, always has like a TV screen on and other people talk through him. And it looks very similar to the robot in this episode that has a TV screen.
Well, their robot was a little better made than our robot.
I mean, a little.
That's not something you can often say about Classic Who. Yeah.
And Chris Cherry's character has on occasion said, release Adam! That's what that's
all about. That's what we're talking about.
And you can see that on mintypineapple.com. Oh, just search for Neil's New Robot, or any episodes with Adam. You can just search Adam and it'll show you all the episodes he's in. So there you go.
Anyway. So many Tardi. We have to get to that note.
We also, okay, so the thing is a memory window. What was the memory window? Wait, what's memory window? Where are we? What's going on?
I don't remember why. Like, it's a thing that shows them, like, their pasts, but I don't remember why he was doing
it. It was bad memories, right?
Yeah. Was he just showing that he was powerful?
Yeah, I think, because it was like, it showed Dodo, like, on the day that her mother died. What did it show Steven?
I don't remember that time he was imprisoned by the mechanoids or something.
But yeah, it's not, he's just like,
I'm a dick, see?
I mean, I think the doctor's like, don't look at it. He's just trying to mess with you. He's just messing with your heads.
Because that's what he does. He's just a messer guy. Like, he has no, like, goal. He just wants to play games.
And if you don't win his games, then you become toys.
Okay, but here's, like, the bullshit thing. If you're going to be that villain of, like, yeah, play my messed up game, and if you win, you win, and if you lose, you lose. Why cheat?
Yeah, no, I have that later. That's the thing that happens a lot in these stories, because this is a common sci-fi trope.
It happened in Farscape, too, I believe.
Like, what's the point of being that character and having those rules if ultimately all you want to be is, like, a dick?
Because I think that's kind of the point. That's what they're going for, is that, like, this guy's a dick.
And he thinks he's better than he is because he cheats. So he's not as great as he says he is.
Yeah, it takes away any sort of nobility or whatever that you could, like, it makes him actually the villain.
But so arbitrary. So why not just, like, openly be a dick? Why invoke the whole, like, games thing at all?
That's the thing about this concept, is that it's painfully arbitrary. Farscape did this. There's a famously terrible episode of Deep Space Nine where they do this. And, like, the thing about having a story where there's, like, you're trapped in a game is that the stakes are artificial. They're real because it's always like, you'll die if you lose or whatever. Like, you can say that you'll die if you lose or whatever. So, like, they're real, but they're still artificial. And in the way that Sweet and Low is real, but it's artificial. Yeah, there's stakes, but, like, everything is so arbitrary. We have to win this game or he'll kill us. Like, why? Because. Like, so, like, it's just, like, manufacturing a made-up thing for these characters to do. Which is actually what writing is anyway. But it's taking, like, it's, like, the least interesting way to do it. It's, like, the cheapest writing thing ever.
And I guess it's just because he's bored, which is a kind of boring.
But see, that's why I like it when it's done, where the person is... I think normally when you see that, it's, like, an honor thing. Like, the thing that comes to mind is, like, the Ultimate Ninja from the 2003 Ninja Turtles.
But Doctor Who... That's me.
But I mean, like, I like this trope when it is, like... No, we followed the rules and you won. Bye. Because to me, that seems a little bit more unsettling. People are assholes. That's pretty believable. But that somebody's just like, hey, let's play this life or death game, okay? And then when they lose, they're like, all right, bye. I'm going to go trap someone else in this life or death game. And like, they don't know that they're being an asshole, I guess.
Yeah, it's much more alien.
So the doctor's playing this stacking game. What's the first game that?
Before
I get to the game,
we gotta mention the So Many Tardi.
Oh yes, yeah, So Many Tardi, which I assume is how you would correctly say TARDIS. Many Tardi.
Many TARDIS.
Yeah. So the toy maker's like, hey, Steven and Dodo, there's a whole bunch of TARDISes. You gotta figure out which one's the real one, or you gotta play games, and there'll be a TARDIS at the end. But it might not be the real one. Who knows? I'm making this up as I go!
Rules to this game don't make much sense, but whatever. I'm going to cheat and win anyway. It doesn't matter.
The rules to the games don't make any sense.
You have to play a game to get to a TARDIS. It may or may not be the real TARDIS, or it may just lead to another game.
And if you lose any of the games, you become a doll forever? Yeah. Is that...
So what's to stop him from just continually putting fake TARDISes? Because I guess the serial has to wrap up in 4 episodes.
It's arbitrary.
So he's like, would you like to play a game? And they're like, all right, sure, whatever. Then there's this other arbitrary thing, which is the doctor can't beat his game before they beat their game. And then part of me is like, well, then why doesn't he just not play the game until they're done?
Well, and then he'll skip him ahead. He'll just be like, do...
Move to move 408.
Yeah, and it will just hopscotch him ahead a whole bunch.
Still pretty stupid.
Yeah.
It's just to build in a ticking clock. Like, it's all the rules of drama laid bare without, like, anything that makes them seem real. It's like, hey, here's obstacles and a ticking clock.
So are you saying they're inside the human mind? But this time it's a writer's mind.
I have actually, that's one of my notes, about how making these arbitrary plans makes the villain just like the writer.
And so the obstacle course is, you have to get past this writer's block!
I mean, yeah, like, and their games do have, like, I think, because there's, like, how many games are there?
There's four games total.
Oh, there's four games. Never mind. I was going to say three-act structure, but fuck that. We're cutting this out.
Some of them are, like, barely games, so.
There's a later one, to skip ahead, just the key one. I was just like, this isn't a game. This is just a thing that happens to people. They're just looking for their keys.
And, like, they don't even really have opponents. I mean, there are, like, other...
Well, they have obstacles.
Yeah.
But they don't have anybody else playing the game with them like they do in the other ones.
Right.
Yeah, let's talk about the first game. It's an obstacle course with the clowns. The clowns that got life. The clowns that got life.
The clowns that got life.
Clowns got life. When these clowns show up, because this is the thing, is that, like, the doctor has gone invisible. Like, they've been kidnapped by this insanely powerful person who the doctor is afraid of. Like, the doctor's met him before. We don't, like, we've never seen him before. But they have a history, so we know that, like, this is bad. We're, like, forced, we've been, like, taken out of the TARDIS. The TARDIS is gone. Things are dire. These clowns come out, and Dodo and Steven are having a good time. Like, these clowns, they're, like, they're laughing.
They're clowning around.
There's these two clowns. Named Joey and Clara.
Hey, I'm represented.
And Clara looks like Bjork. And yeah, and then, like, they're just, like, kind of having fun, like, playing pranks on each other, and they think it's hysterical. Even though, like, they're in so much danger.
I didn't really think about that, but they totally do. And by the time it's like, you have to play these two clowns in a game, they're like, what?
The doctor tries to warn them, like, hey, it may not be on the up and up. And then the Celestial Toy Maker's like, none of that.
Is that when he takes his voice away?
No, not yet. That's the next episode.
Oh, okay.
Does he make him invisible at this point, though?
Yeah, he makes him invisible again. What happens. He makes him invisible so that he can't interfere anymore, and then in the next episode, he still is like, hey, by the way! And he's like, well, I guess I gotta take your voice away, too. He leaves him with one hand.
That's also artificial because it's solely there so that William Hartnell can go on vacation. I swear he does this every other serial. Yeah, just write me out. Oh, wait, I play two characters this serial? Well, I still gotta go on vacation. Write me out. But, yeah, so there's this obstacle course. One person is blindfolded. The other person is in a soundproof booth and has a beeper that you beep once for left, twice for right, or whatever. And
you can do right, left, forward.
Yeah, and you have to use that to guide your blindfolded opponent through the obstacle course.
But the clowns are both dicks.
The clowns fly through the obstacle course. Like, that was nothing. And then when Steven and Dodo's turn comes up, who's blindfolded first? Is it Dodo?
I think it was Steven.
Steven.
Okay, they do it twice, though.
Steven goes through the obstacle course.
But while he's going through the obstacle course, Joey's going around moving shit.
He's, like, moving, like, stools. And I guess there are, like, there's this one thing where he has to, like, swing from a rope and, like, get to the other side. And, like, that's when he moves. But from the text, it sounded like there were spikes. That yeah. He was swinging over?
I think so. Oh, we don't know. This episode does not exist. There's another bit where he goes inside of a tube and he's crawling through the tube and Joey turns the tube around. Okay, but wouldn't Steven feel that?
I'm confused because it seems like you have a lot more, you got a lot more detail out of, like, listening to it. My captions just said things that basically amounted to Steven plays the game. Like, they weren't that detailed.
Oh.
Oh, I think maybe we had a better one than you then.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, like, they were there. And also, I didn't have a lot of sleep that night before. So maybe I was just tired. But, like, I remember, like, not being able to follow clearly what was happening at all.
It is very difficult. But, yeah, you just sort of piece stuff together, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, like, there was a bit where Steven goes into the tube and then Joey turns the tube around. And then,
I mean,
like,
he does because he like, takes his blindfold off. They're like, you lose. Or they lose.
No.
They run out of time?
No. Like, they win.
No.
The clowns lose. because...
No, no. At first, they lose.
No, they don't. They get through it. They barely get through it. Because they keep going until there's a loser. And
I thought they lost, and then when they lost, Steven was like, we didn't lose because you cheated. We're playing again.
I don't think that happened.
Well, then what happens?
Well, it's like, it's your turn again, but I see you guys have been cheating. I didn't know the rules, so this time we're going to fuck with stuff. And they looked at Joey's blindfold, and Joey's blindfold you could see through. So right. He's like, here, wear my blindfold. And, like, they stop, the person from fucking with shit. And then so he tries to get, and he falls to his death. Well, he doesn't die, but he falls off of something.
He falls, Joey and then does. What did our thing say? They turn into twisted figures?
Yeah. Okay, so I think we did have the same one, because I remember reading that.
And I was like, what does that mean? I assume they turned back into dolls.
Yeah, when but they like, lost. Fucked up dolls.
But twisted. Welcome to my twisted
mind. You know, I will say, I think after we watched this serial, we watched very shortly thereafter, or shortly before, we watched Night Terrors. That also involves being in a dollhouse with creepy dolls. Just a note.
Okay, thanks for sharing.
And it's also not very good.
It's okay. It definitely should have been in the first half, not second half.
It pretty much relies very heavily on creepy kids, creepy dolls. Why? This is creepy.
I like the ending of acceptance of your adopted child. Anyway.
Anyway, Classic Who.
Classic Who.
We're getting better. Our tangents are at least Doctor Who related.
I tell Tony, it's like, isn't it weird? Like, we're watching the same show from two different points and going in order. Like, we're watching the same show at two different points in time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember saying something like about, I think it was like the last time I was on or something about how, like, before that I'd watched an episode, like the current episode of the show at the time, and like the Classic Who serial that I'd watched was like exactly 50 years before that.
But yeah, they win, and then it's a fake TARDIS, but there's a riddle. It rhymes.
What's something cool is that this is the end of the episode. Each episode ends with the riddle, and they put the riddle up.
Texts on the screen, yeah.
I liked it. I liked reading the riddle.
I like that too. I remember like, it makes it feel like, hey, folks at home, can you solve it?
No.
Spoilers, no, you can't.
It's not a riddle you can actually solve.
Turn to the back of the episode for the answer.
There's literally nothing here in this riddle that you can solve because it's only how to figure out the next room, which you have no idea what's in the next room.
Right, and it makes questionable sense once you have it solved.
So that's the end of the Celestial Toy...
Celestial Toy Room.
Yes, that. And we are now on to episode 2, The Hall of Dolls!
And I feel like there's no way they could have known, but this episode could very easily have been called A Game of Thrones.
It could have been called A Game of Thrones! That's the game they play!
Oh my god, it literally is.
Joe was like, are they going to play musical chairs? It's like, no, they're going to play a game where they sit in chairs and some of the chairs might kill you. Okay.
Well, I was expecting, like, musical chairs, there's one less chair, and then whoever doesn't get the chair gets zapped.
But instead, what the game is that there's seven chairs?
Yeah. And, like,
you have to find
six dolls?
You have to find the one chair that's the real chair.
Or the one chair that's not deadly.
And, yeah, what they end up finding are these dolls. I think
there's, like, TARDIS cabinets.
Yeah. I think the riddle calls them voiceless servants. Okay.
They're dolls.
But they're not dolls. They're life-size dolls. And so, like, they're carrying them around and they're, like, bigger than they are. And they're, like, dragging them over to these chairs. And they will sit them down in a chair and, like, something terrible will happen to it. Like, it'll freeze or explode or something.
Or, like, a knife will go through it.
Yeah. Right. But their opponents for this one are King and Queen.
And there's also a jester and a jack.
Yeah, they're cards. And I thought they looked great.
They did look great.
I was very excited when I saw them. Briefly, as a still image, I was very excited about it.
You know, yeah, no, they're great costumes. And I have to say, like, at the beginning, I was like, good on Dodo for figuring that out. I mean, it's not hard. But, like, yeah, you got it. But then, like, as the episode, like, goes on, I can't tell if Dodo knows what she means when she says they're cards. Because she's like, well, how can we talk to them? They're cards. But like, no, they're clearly just in card-themed costumes. Like, do you think they're actually cards? Like, right now? I mean, I think in the end, they get turned into cards. But like, it'd be like if I saw someone like dressed up like Spider-Man and thought, hey, there's a Spider-Man comic. Why is it talking to me?
The thing that I love about Dodo, she's very clever sometimes.
Yeah, she's smart enough to kind of figure out what to do with the dolls, but then dumb enough to just tell her opponents about it.
See, and I don't know if dumb's the right word. Like, maybe she's a little naive.
That definitely comes up later, too, in our last game. But yeah.
Something basically, her thing is that if we don't tell them, it's not fair. And Steven's like, who cares if it's fair?
They're not playing fair.
Yeah, everyone here cheats, and they're going to kill us. Don't tell them. And she's like, well, that doesn't seem right, but...
And now we're going to get to a plot point that bothers me slightly. They're talking with the Hearts, the Heart family.
They're the king and queen of Hearts.
Oh, yeah. I called them the Heart family in my head, and I just assumed that we were talking about it, but I guess we didn't. So they're talking to the Heart family, and the Heart family basically says, yeah, we were people that have been trapped by the toy maker after we lost our games. So, and he turned us into toys and shit. We've been here for like a while. And I guess they stay there. Spoilers.
They don't get saved, man.
No one in this serial gets saved that were previously toys.
And, like, presumably, their, like, kind of half-life existence that they have is also gone. Because at the end, spoilers, like, the whole universe that the Celestial Toy Maker has created, like, falls apart.
Wait, and it falls apart because he loses, right?
Yeah.
Why?
It's arbitrary.
If he loses a game, he loses his power?
No, he doesn't lose his power. He can rebuild it.
But the whole universe stops existing because...
Them's the rules.
All right.
Why even introduce that as a concept if you're just going to leave them there to whatever?
Right. Why not just make them, like, toys that he can bring to life?
I was going
to
say, or if once you defeat the toy maker, cut to, like, oh, I'm back home with me family. I don't know what I just did there.
No one does.
But I'm pretty sure it's offensive. Speaking of offensive, let's get to it, shall we?
Let's get to it.
All right.
So they've got these dolls. They're splitting them up amongst people, and there's two different rooms, so Steven and Dodo go check out one room, King, Queen, Satan's one room.
There's a lot of sequences, by the way, in this episode in particular, where none of the main cast appear. We, like, hang out with the King and Queen by themselves for a while, which is weird, because they're not good characters.
They're mostly just doing comedy bits. So the King is deciding which chair to put a doll in, and does the classic eeny, meeny, miny, moe game.
But it's the...
But he does not say tiger. He says something far more inappropriate.
He says a word that was apparently fine to say on TV at the time.
Yeah.
That blows my mind a little bit.
Yes.
Like...
This is like, what, 64?
60? Like, I know the world is screwed up and was screwed up. That just blows my mind. And there was a point in time where everyone looked at that and went, yeah, all right, see no problem here. Let's move on.
See, I have a thing about this because I've argued with my mom about this because sometimes she gets uncomfortable with, like, cursing or whatever, like, and, like, bad words. And, like, there's this idea that, like, oh, look, certain words are becoming more accepted. Like, you can say shit on basic cable now. Society is, like, becoming more permissive. Like, there's not things that you can't say anymore. But that's not true. It's just the things that you can't say anymore are changing. And this is, like, a good example of it. Like, because I remember reading about how, in the past, generally the things that were considered bad words, things that you couldn't say, curses, were either blasphemy or, like, references to, like, bodily functions. So, like, shit and goddammit. Like, those were the things that were not polite to say.
I still can't say that at home. I still get a look from my mom. Like, and it doesn't matter if that follows, like, a string of other swears. Those are fine.
And so, like, some, like, people will get all hand-wringing and say, oh, people can say shit on TV now. This is, like, a sign of society going to hell or whatever. But back in 1964 or whatever, on a children's show, it's perfectly okay to say the N-word, and that is not okay now. And that is better. This is a much better society to live in.
Like, objectively, that's better.
I think it's better that, like, we're going to be careful about saying words that harm people, as opposed to saying words that reference, like, feces.
And I think the BBC themselves were aware of this when they released the audiobook version that had narration by Peter Purvis, Stephen. When they got to that section, Stephen just straight up narrates over it so you don't hear it. The king was choosing chairs, he says loudly.
It's an and then there were none situation. Like the Agatha Christie book, because it didn't used to be called that. It used to be called Ten Little Indians, and before that it was called 10 little tigers.
Great.
So they're choosing chairs. Which, by the way, the implication, like, in episode one, the Celestial Toymaker says, oh, they defeated my clowns. I'll give them someone even harder. But these cards seem much worse at playing games. Like, the clowns were, like, they were, like, shifty, and they were doing stuff. They were cheating and going around, and, you know, whereas these are very bumbling cards.
They are. They're just like, oh, I guess we gotta do a thing. But they mostly just bicker with themselves and forget that Steven and Dodo exist.
Like the show does.
Yeah.
Because there comes a point where they're like, we need to figure out which chair. And instead of being like, let's just force Steven and Dodo to sit in a chair, they're like, let's let the fool do it. Why? I guess you don't want to accidentally sit Steven and Dodo in the right chair.
Yeah, then they win.
I guess. I just...
Does the fool die?
I don't remember.
No, because I feel like the kid blows it. Like, he starts laughing and is like, ha, it's possible we're going to kill you. That's hilarious.
Yeah, something like that happens. Yeah, he ruins it.
The Joker runs away for sure. Yeah. And, like, the knave's chasing him down.
And so then the king's like, the king and queen are like, well, so you're going to do it, right? Not me.
But before that, Dodo gets tired, you guys, and straight up sits in a chair that's not the right damn chair.
I don't think it's that she gets tired. I think she's they ran out of dolls, and she's like, well, maybe it's this one, and just sits down.
Yeah, that's the impression I got, was that, like, we're out of dolls. Fuck it.
But she guesses wrong. I'm just glad it's not the one that dissects you.
Right!
That was the one that, like, froze you, right?
Yeah, she's getting colder.
How'd they get out of that?
Like, Steven pulled her off, I think.
Oh.
Like, no big. It wasn't any of the other chairs which caused instant, terrible, terrifying death.
She chose
It's the slow death chair.
As long as you get up, you're fine.
Which, you know, arbitrary.
Which means that also, these episodes are full of so much redundant exposition. There's so much talk about games. Like, halfway through episode one, the word game doesn't mean anything anymore. Because they say it so many times. So it's game, game, game. The thing of it is that watching this episode is like sitting through the first 10 minutes of when everyone decides to play a board game. So they have to pull it out, and no one remembers the same rules. And so they're just, like, looking at the inside of the lid, just like, wait, I think you can have, like 6 cards. No, it's 4 cards. We play this at home all the time. It's like, yeah, but we play with 6 cards. Okay, check the rules.
Do you guys play double up on the draw twos, or no? Well, it's a great rule. Let's do it. No, we don't understand it as it is. We're not adding new rules. Okay, and that's another thing. Like, the original intent for this episode was to be a battle of wits between the Celestial Toymaker and the Doctor. And then it sort of got shoved aside and just like, let's do silly games with Steven and Dodo and just not do anything at all with the Doctor.
Apparently, like, this serial was, like, written in the middle of, like, the show basically changing, like, writing teams. And no, because I was reading up and, like there was, like, a transition and, like, they didn't really have one showrunner. They had, like, 2 people that kind of had the function of a showrunner, like, one that was more, like, producery and one that was, like, the head writer. And, like, they started writing this episode, the serial, with, like, the 2 writers that were, like, leaving, 2 showrunners. And they wrote this episode, like, and then the new people got it and were like, we can't shoot this. And so they wrote this, like, they completely rewrote it. Or not even that, no, it was, like, the writer, the guy who wrote it, like, the credited writer wrote one. The first showrunners were like, we can't shoot this. And completely rewrote it. And the new people got it and were like, this is crap. And rewrote it again.
And then there was like, I think there was like limitations put on them as well. After that, like, I think like maybe the Doctor going on vacation was like thrown in the mix. And they're like, well, now we got to write him out.
Which incidentally, apparently when they were talking about this episode, the idea was thrown out that this was how they were going to replace William Hartnell.
Really?
Yeah. An idea that was floated was that he would get turned invisible by the Celestial Toymaker, and when he was turned visible again, he would be played by a different actor. And imagine if that were the case.
I feel like regeneration probably wouldn't have been a thing anymore.
No, it wouldn't have. But, like, what would have happened, like, years, like down the line when they, like, they had to recast with the Celestial Toymaker?
Do you think they just keep turning him invisible?
No, would the Celestial Toymaker have to keep coming back? Would that be, like, a thing?
Or would they just keep writing really ridiculous ways wherein he, like, accidentally turns into a new person? That's amazing. That's, yeah. I didn't know that.
That could have potentially killed Doctor Who in the long run.
It could have. Like, I don't think... It wouldn't have been as durable.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That's... How many more episodes does he have, though? Because he's...
I want to say 3 or 4. Maybe 5.
Oh, my gosh. For real?
Yeah.
We're that close to 2?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We'll have our first regeneration.
So, now...
Yes.
Classic Who. So, the king and the queen, they sit in the wrong chair. Stephen and Dodo sit in the right chair.
That's basically happening. But
what did you expect?
What more do you need to know? Then...
The phone in the TARDIS rings. Which is probably the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, that was fun to see. Because, that's the thing that doesn't happen very often. That's the thing that Stephen Moffat loves to do. I was like, oh, hey, look, they did that.
But it's the toy maker, and he's like, yo, here's your next riddle. Let me drop some rhymes for you. And he does. And then they call... I still don't remember what the calling the dolls... What that was about. Like, they had the ability to call the dolls with, their mind or something.
I don't know, but then there are ballerina dolls, and they're scary.
Yeah, well, they call the dolls, and they come in, and they basically just block their way. So it was, stupid. But anyway, that was the end of the Hall of Dolls, and we're now into episode 3, The Dancing Floor!
Weird.
This episode is weird. But yeah, they call the dolls and they provide no useful thing. They just block the way. Does that unlock the next thing, I think, maybe?
Sure.
Absolutely, why not?
So they go into a kitchen in the most ill-conceived game yet. Okay, so at least the obstacle course, there's a degree of difficulty. They have to solve things. That makes sense. The second one, the chairs thing, that's logic and stuff. That makes sense. This is the one they just... It's stupid.
They just gotta find a key. It's just somewhere in the kitchen.
They're the only ones looking for it. There's no other opponents.
There's 2 people in there, but they're not trying to stop them.
No.
They're just, they are kind of stopping them, but only by being annoying.
That's it.
And, Dodo gets one of them to help.
Yeah. So it's not even, looking for the key. It's just really pointless comedy that's happening here.
It's weird. And I remember I have one note, because it's barely a game. At one point, Steven says, oh, so it's Hunt the Thimble. And I'm like, was that a thing? What, those poor, poor English people, what did they do? What were their lives? People were just, hiding thimbles?
And then, having domestic arguments to distract you from finding the thimble.
There's 2 teams. One team distracts the other team from trying to find the thimble by fighting with each other. Not with the other team, but with each other.
I don't think this was a game that existed at the time. I think this is just a look into, the domestic strife that existed in this writer's childhood.
Hunt the Thimble was a game. It was a party game.
In which all but one partygoer leaves the room. The person remaining in the room hides a thimble or other small object somewhere in the room. When everyone comes back in, they must locate the hidden object.
That's it. That's the game.
But only 2, not everyone was looking for the key. Just Dodo and Steven, that's it.
I would like to point out this game actually exists in different countries. There's a version of it in Germany, there's a version of it in Poland, there's a version of it in Russia. And basically places where people don't have anything to do.
But you also say cold and hot.
Well, that's hot and cold. That's a game.
Warmer, warmer, warmer. Cold.
We've played that game.
We have played. We've played Hunt the Thimble without even realizing it.
I think we learned that people aren't so different.
I feel like it's only a game if you have someone saying warmer. Otherwise, you're just looking for your keys, which is my morning.
Again, yeah, it's just a thing that happens.
But yeah, there's just a bunch of this is becoming this episode's... What's it called in Doctor Who? The word? Bad Wolf.
The Bad Torch Wolf. Wolf.
Torchwood.
Did you just say Torchwolf?
I did say Torchwood or Mr. Saxon. This specific episode is arbitrary. It's a kitchen. There's a chef and a soldier for some reason.
Well, I guess because he's like a toy soldier.
Yeah, but he doesn't mesh with the chef. The chef meshes with the kitchen. I don't know why it's a kitchen. And there's also just a dude that's asleep.
Where do they find the key?
But before we get that, I want to say my favorite line in this episode, which some ridiculous bullshit is happening that's not important to anything. And Steven just goes, all right, I'm ignoring you.
There's a line that I kind of latched onto early on. Steven's getting annoyed and Dodo goes, they're not real. How can you lose your temper with them? And it occurred to me that that's actually a really good metaphor for mental illness.
A metaphor for mental illness?
Like, they're not real. How can you lose your temper with them? Like, that's true. Thought about that a lot.
I feel like I need more insight here.
Or, like, not necessarily metaphor, but it just reminded me of, like, the thing, not, yeah, metaphor isn't the right word, but, like, the things that people say, like, that you hear, like, oh, like, why is that a thing that upsets you? Why can't you deal with that? Just, like, be better. Basically, it's like saying it's all in your head, but, like, it's still a thing that's annoying. Just because, like, it's not, like, real doesn't mean it, like, yeah, but the effect is still happening.
Okay, I see what you're saying. That's true.
But that also bothers me, that line specifically, because we've already previously established that they are real. There are people that are trapped in this fucking game. That's barely a game. They are real. Which is probably how Dodo sweet, like, she sort of sweet talks the soldier into help find the key, which just leads to him breaking China, and then it just keeps happening.
There's a lot of shouting at one point, which is great when you can't see it.
Eventually, they find the key in a pie.
It's in a pie.
I'm a pie.
So wait, there's actually 5 games. This is our third.
Oh, because the dance floor.
The dance floor is coming up. So they get the key. The toy maker's like really pissed that the kitchen's a mess, by the way.
Is he?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, like he comes in and is like, what the fuck, you guys? You're supposed to, like, do a thing and you just break all my shit? Back to the dollhouse for you.
I think those people were dolls. Because he's like, I gave you a chance at life and you screwed it up.
Like, it's sort of inconsistent. I think, like, when we were, like, doing pre-production on the thing that I shot, well, I learned a phrase that I thought was very useful. Which I think this might be draft drift. Where, like, in one draft of the script, they were real people. And another draft of the script, they were dolls. Like, they were always fake. It's inconsistent because different people wrote different things and no one ever fixed it.
I feel like that happens a lot on this show. Like, there's a lot of, like, wait, you set it up as one thing, but now it's another? Barbara was a god. Now she's, like, just a reincarnation of a priest? Which is it? Is she a god or a reincarnation of a priest? So, yeah, they get the key and they walk into a room. There's, like, 3 ballerinas, I want to say.
I mean, I don't know because I never saw it.
Yeah, it's like, it just says, the ballerinas dance. And then we just sit there and listen to music for, like, 5 minutes.
So, like, once you get on the dance floor, like, you can't stop?
But also, like, they trigger it, too. Like, when they enter that area, it starts, and when they go away, it stops.
It stops.
So, like, they're like, wicka, wicka, wicka. You know, like...
Okay. But basically, they solve the problem by somehow they convince...
Like, if you get on the dancing floor, you immediately, like, wind up with a ballerina.
Yes.
Like, they grab you, and you are
and
forced
you
to dance
forced
with them.
To dance. And then, like, here's the thing. The toy maker yells at the soldier and the chef.
Right?
To be like, you guys were supposed to keep them from winning the game. And all you did was help them. Go make sure that they don't get any farther. And then they basically get out of the dance floor because the chef and the soldier are on the dance floor. Which means there's not enough partners for everybody, so they just get out that way.
So they helped.
Incidentally, this section has one of my favorite captions in the whole thing, which is, Steven cautiously approaches the dance floor. Which I appreciate, because I, too, always cautiously approach the dance floor.
That's great.
Oh, you didn't on our wedding night, my friend. You tore that dance floor up, sir.
I specifically remember MIA.
Paper Planes.
Yes.
Paper Planes, yeah. I enjoy Paper Planes.
You were a dancing fool that night, sir. We have footage of it.
There was no caution.
I really want Vince to, like, remix just this section of the podcast. With all our random references to things being on the dance floor and off the dance floor into just like a club track.
The last episode we did had Vince's Chumbly remix.
Oh, finally?
So Vince, this is your new, yeah, you haven't heard it yet, but yeah, he did it because Vince is on the last episode.
It's fantastic.
So Vince, new challenge has arisen. Put us on the dance floor.
It's okay, Vince. You don't have to do it. It's okay, Vincent. We aren't going camping.
Put us on the dance floor. Take us off of the dance floor. Whatever you want to do.
Cautiously.
Cautiously. Chris cautiously approaches the dance floor.
So they defeat the thing. They get to the fake TARDIS.
Yes, yet another fake TARDIS. That's when, okay, then the toy maker has a Kylo fit and is like, nothing's going my way. Kylo Ren, say the thing you said, Chris.
For those of you who weren't listening to the part of the podcast that we cut out.
Because Joe skipped ahead.
Kylo Ren is a character from a film called Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. You may not have seen it, but it's very pretty good. And you should see it, because it's not doing very well.
Go to a theater now and see Star Wars. They could use the numbers.
The Star Wars in theaters now.
What happened?
That movie needs our plug. Like, that's how bad it's doing.
Tell a friend. Take them with you.
And now that we've plugged it, it will do much better. So if you hear anything about this movie doing well, you should know it's because of the influence of the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Really Pretty Good is going to be on the poster soon. Chris Cherry. So yeah, the toy maker's like, I'm going to send him something innocent and
the worst.
And it's a schoolboy. They will be tricked by this schoolboy. They won't expect him to be as terrifyingly evil as he really is.
But she's just straight up an asshole, so there's no real trickery there. It only takes you like 2 seconds to realize that he's a giant dick.
But they get a new riddle. It's really short. They go in there and they meet Cyril. Hello, Cyril.
Cyril is terrible. Which is another thing. This is yet another like snafu that happened in this because of the Cyril. There is like not one but two separate legal problems wherein writers put in existing characters from other things into this, and then, like, had to take them out.
It was Billy something. I forget.
Billy Bunter.
Billy Bunter. What? Was it originally going to be Billy Bunter, and then they just changed it?
No, this time it wasn't. But there was in another episode, I think maybe possibly, like, either the card couple or the soldier, like, another writer had put in these two characters that were from a play that this guy had written. And it turns out that this guy who had written the play was the head of, like, drama production or the head of serial production at the BBC. And, like, this guy found out and was like, you can't just put my characters in your, like, serial. Don't do that. And they had to, like, take them out.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah, and then they wrote this character, Cyril, which is basically Billy Bunter. I want to read to you, I think, a thing from the Wikipedia article about Billy Bunter, because it is not true. Bunter's defining characteristic is his greediness and dramatically overweight appearance. His character is, in many respects, a highly obnoxious anti-hero. As well as his gluttony, he is also obtuse, lazy, racist, inquisitive, deceitful, slothful, self-important, and conceited. These defects, however, are not recognized by Bunter. In his own mind, he is an exemplary character, handsome, talented, and aristocratic, and dismisses most of those around him as beasts. Even so, the negative sides of Bunter are offset by several genuine redeeming features, such as his tendency, from time to time, to display courage in the aid of others, his ability to be generous on the rare occasions when he has food or cash, and above all, his very real love and concern for his mother. All these, combined with Bunter's cheery optimism, his comically transparent untruthfulness, and inept attempts to conceal his antics from his schoolmates and schoolfellows, combined to make a character that succeeds in being highly entertaining, but which rarely attracts the reader's lasting sympathy. Like, that's not true. Nothing about this character in any form could be highly entertaining. So, like, he is every awful thing that you can think of, but you'll like him sometimes, because sometimes he helps people a little bit, and he's a mama's boy, so it's okay.
That seems like every male character ever I'm supposed to like, but don't.
Sometimes he's not 100% a dick. So, but yeah, like, so they made this character that's very similar to that character. The actor himself made a joke about it that got left in, like, ad-libbed, apparently. He said, my school friends call me Billy.
Oh.
And they, like, got into some light legal trouble over it and, like, had to put a disclaimer before the episode saying that that's not the same character.
There was no disclaimer, by the way. When they said the N-word.
Yeah.
That was fine. Just copyright infringement. That's the only thing we can't tolerate.
That is the end of episode 3, The Dancing Floor. We are now into the final episode, the fourth episode, The Final Test.
Yes, and the final test is this game. It's a game that they're playing. It's basically a giant board game where you have to hop from one space to the other. And the reason why you have to do this is because the floors are electrified. And if you fall on the floor, you will presumably die.
The floor is lava.
Yeah, it's like the floor is lava. And it's also like Candyland, but without the candy, so it's just land.
And also just, we keep using that word, but arbitrarily throws in, like, you have to do random shit. Like, just randomly. Like, it's just like, because you roll a die to...
Which I kept thinking, if it was me, I would drop that shit on the electrified floor so fast.
And then die?
Like, yeah, and then I'd be like, what now? And I guess I'd lose, because I guess the answer is you have to go get it. So.
But you roll the die, you move as many spaces as the die. If you land on the same space as someone else, that person gets sent back to the start. Also, just randomly, it'll like say, hey, move more, or move less.
The spaces have like little things on them, and sometimes it'll be like, go back two spaces, go ahead.
Oh, was it on the spaces they landed on?
Yes.
I thought it just happened randomly. That actually kind of makes sense.
I mean,
it's
no,
still
it's not
arbitrary.
Like the spaces had like skip ahead on them. They had like a little rotaty thingy on them. And like once you landed on them, it would pop up and say, like the same space could send you forward or backwards. It's not like you landed on a go ahead space.
I think there was just one big one.
Yeah, there was just one big one.
I don't know, man.
One big totem
was
that
there?
Would spin. Yeah.
And it just happened randomly?
Yeah, but maybe it was triggered by landing on the space.
It would, yeah.
That's the only way that makes any damn sense. Because I remember, like, they were rolling the dice, and the totem thing would show the number that they rolled. But I noticed, like, it said, like, skip a turn on it. I was like, how the hell did that pop up? They have dice. And then, like, it would just randomly pop up. And be like, oh, okay. It's still, even if it is, like, they land on the space and then it does it, it's still pretty random and arbitrary.
Speaking of arbitrary, it basically gets to the point where Steven's like, this is stupid, I'm going to the TARDIS. I think that's what happens, and Dodo's like, no, we have to play the game. If we don't play the game, then we don't win. And, like, the Celestial Toymaker will say we lost and keep us as dolls forever. We have to play the game.
He actually shows up.
Yeah, he, like, force ghost appears.
Oh, yeah, but that's the thing. That's what he does. He puts a force field. Literally, he goes, force field! I win! Force field! He puts a force field in front of the TARDIS, and the force field only yields to people who have won the game.
Also, Joe mentioned force ghost. Force ghost again, a concept from the Star Wars series of films. Go see Star Wars.
Though that Star Wars, as
you
far as I know, has no
know
force ghosts
force
in
ghosts
it.
Are.
Well, it has force ghost voices, but not force ghost figures. The Doctor, by the way, is revoiced. But it doesn't really matter because the Doctor has very little to do with the entire plot of this series.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much throughout the series, we haven't mentioned, but like it's cutting back to him solving the puzzle. But that's
just
it.
It's just
so,
a little floating hand coming around because he left his hand visible. He's entirely invisible other than that, but his hand is still there.
Well, I think the idea is that it's only his hand is tangible, yeah.
But it's also visible. It wasn't even William Hartnell's hand, by the way.
What if it was? What if they made William Hartnell stay?
Just for his hand.
They put his ring on and he pre-recorded all of his lines before he lost his voice. Then we have the other example of Dodo being naive, which is that Cyril hurts his leg somehow. I don't even remember how. But he's like cut his ankle and it's bleeding and stuff. Dodo's like, I'm going to go help him. And Steven's like, don't be stupid. This is obviously a trick. This guy has been a dick this entire time.
Why do you even care if he did hurt himself?
He's been tricking us this entire... I mean, he's been very not straightforward. Like, explaining the rules after we've already fucked him up sort of thing.
Also, he's very transparent in his obfuscation. It's not like he's, like, trying hard.
She goes back to check on him. He's like, ha ha, you shouldn't have came back. Now you have to go to the start. Ha ha, ha ha, I get to win now. And, like, rolls a die, and, like, he's going to win, and he jumps forward and slips on his own fucking, you know, oil spill that he caused.
Yeah, he like, I guess slicked up one of the spots to make Dodo or Steven fall, but then he falls on it himself, and he gets off.
Yeah, because he gets so excited, and he's, like, celebrating. He gets overly excited, and he slips and falls to his death. Like Gollum in the books, in the book version of Return of the King. Like, he's just, like, celebrating. Like, he gets to the ring, and he's like, oh, I'm so excited. And he falls, and that's how the ring is destroyed in the book. The book, by the way, made into a trilogy of films called The Lord of the Rings Trilogy, in case you haven't seen it. Go rent or buy them from iTunes, because physical media doesn't exist.
I would just like to thank you for saying that. I hate physical media. That's all.
But, like, yeah, he falls off the thing, lands on the electrified floor, and turns into a force ghost.
Sure. That's exactly what happens.
No, he just explodes. And then they're like, I guess we win. But they have to, like, play it through because we have to fill time. And they almost slip on the same damn square.
They do.
But they win.
They get to the TARDIS, which is the real TARDIS?
Yes, because he's like, it hums. It is the real TARDIS.
It's alive.
And then the Doctor wins after being made
visible. He doesn't win yet, though. He holds off putting the very last piece in so that the universe won't explode while they're in it again, because...
It's arbitrary.
Then they're all reunited, and it feels so good.
He has to trick the toy maker into making the last thing while
I don't even think that's what it is.
If he wins, then he loses, and the universe gets destroyed, them along with it. They're like, well, we're going to get in our TARDIS first.
So he gets into the TARDIS.
Well, they can't get into the TARDIS.
Why?
Right? Or do they?
Yeah.
I don't remember. They're like,
they can get in.
But then they're like, the toy maker's fucking with them. I don't remember how.
Oh, here's what I remember. They get into the TARDIS, and the doctor is like, hey, move to 300 and whatever, the last move. And just by saying it out loud, it does it, because it's commanded by voice.
Like, apparently he says it like the Celestial toy maker or something.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
But he doesn't. Like, but that's what he says, is like, I had to say it with his voice. I was like, no, you didn't.
You didn't do that at all.
Oh, we also skipped over the fact that Steven straight up punches the toy maker.
Oh, he did!
Little effect.
But it was cool, though. And then there's candy. Why is there candy?
Oh, because Dodo and her naivete had taken candy, or was given candy, by Cyril, the person who was always awful, and everything he did was bad. She had this candy, and thought, this is probably safe to eat.
Did she eat it, though, or did the doctor?
The doctor does.
The doctor's like, oh, candy, I'm gonna get in on that. He eats a piece of candy, clearly unaware of the Earth urban legend of candy with razor blades in it from Halloween, because he just immediately digs into this strange candy and fucks up his teeth, and that's the cliffhanger.
I'm gonna spoil something for you guys, because I've seen the next episode. There's nothing wrong with the candy.
Wait, for real?
For real. The doctor just has a toothache and has to go see a dentist. I'm not even joking. That's 100% it.
I don't want to see the doctor go to the dentist for a whole episode. Something else happens, right?
No, that's it.
They're singing.
What is the name of the next episode?
The Gunfighters.
That doesn't sound like an episode where someone goes to the dentist.
They do. I'm not wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll eat my hat.
I want to see you eat a hat.
But I'm not wrong. But yeah, that's pretty much it. They defeated the Celestial Toy Maker. He exploded. And he's probably going to rebuild himself.
Yeah, and they heavily imply that this is not the last we'll see of him. And it was the last we saw of him.
They've done that twice now. Like, oh, I don't think that'll be the last we see of him.
And then it is.
I mean, that's it. They don't see him anymore. They said that with the monk.
Joe, what? Is it time for final thoughts?
It's time for final thoughts.
You gotta do the thing.
Final thoughts!
Yeah! So let's let our guest go first.
Yes.
Chris, what are your final thoughts?
I wasn't a fan. It was the weirdest thing, this being my first, like, mostly full-on reconstruction, which in some ways it was a good one, in some ways it was a bad one, because on one hand, it was incredibly visual. It was hard to know what's going on because, like, it's just like, I'm having to read captions, like, I'm not seeing it. But on the other hand, it has the most ludicrously simple plot that it's actually easy to follow. Like, I can't imagine watching something like, I don't know, even just like An Unearthly Child, where like, there's a whole like plot about like the politics of cavemen and making fire. And I don't know which caveman wants the fire because I can't see. Is this actually a thing that's kind of a problem for me too with Big Finish audios even? I've heard people say that like sometimes it's hard to follow Big Finish audios because of like they'll have like weird alien voices. And I'm always like, that's not the problem for me. I just can't tell like old English character actors apart.
I have that problem watching things because of faces. All faces look the same to me. I have a really hard time specifically watching CW shows.
Because they're all CW hot?
They're all CW hot, which means they all look vaguely the same.
So in some respects, it was actually a good one to start with, just because the plot was so simple. But in some respects, it wasn't, because again, not very good. It did remind, and it didn't help that it reminds me of a much better 2 serial called The Mind Robber, which you'll get to eventually. I think Jez has already claimed that one.
I think Jez and Ben Patton both have. Maybe we'll just have all three of you fuckers on.
Yeah, because I want to do it too. I love The Mind Robber. The Mind Robber's great. Yeah, let's all do it. And there'll be a drinking game. And
we can do it sober. I don't care.
But no, yeah, and so it doesn't help that it kind of reminds me of that, but poorly written. It's so arbitrary. The stakes are so artificial that like it feels like a waste of everyone's time. Final thoughts.
I will say that, like, talking about it, it seems like a much worse episode than it did while I was watching it. Just because while I was watching it, I was having fun enough. I enjoyed the characters, and I like the cards, and it was entertaining enough, but it's a mess. Nothing has to be the way that it is at all. Like, this episode could have just as easily not happened. I thought, and I'm kind of disappointed, because I thought I was going to really like the Celestial Toymaker, because like I said, I do like villains who are kind of like, I like playing games, but who like stick to it, because I find them kind of creepy and also kind of fun, just because like, they want to be the best. But to just cheat? Then that makes it all pointless. And then everything's pointless. Then why do it? And also, I think I've said this almost every time, but I really like Dodo. I'm ready to see more of her. And I'm probably going to keep saying that till it's her last episode, and then I'm going to be sad. Final thoughts.
That's your final thoughts?
That's it.
All right, time for my final thoughts. This was like just the definition of filler episode. Yeah, it's fine when you're watching it. Like, oh, this is all right. It's terrible. But like, there's nothing lasting from it. It's like my notes are very bare because just they play a game for 15 minutes, you know, with it's like 5 minutes of anything else.
It's like eating a bag of generic brand potato chips. We're like, I'll eat this because they're here and I don't have anything else. Then I'm never going to go out of my way to eat them again.
They're not filling. But also you go through the entire bag really quickly. Like, there's no point where you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to finish this bag. It just happens. The pace was okay, just because it happens and you go along with it. You're like, okay, there's nothing really substantial, but there's nothing that like drags it, I don't feel like. But I do feel like it's a shame that we had Michael Grach, and like he's very underutilized, and I feel like maybe that's because he kind of maybe got written out a bit in favor of these games with Seaman and Dodo. But I would have more preferred sort of like a battle of wits between the Doctor and him. And I feel like that would have been interesting.
Yes.
More interesting than what we got.
Yes.
Which is just a hand playing with... The Doctor got one game and Seaman and Dodo got five.
Like I said, it might as well just not happen. Because, like, the Doctor's game doesn't... Like, I guess it's supposed to add some sense of urgency, but it really doesn't. Not any more than, with, like, the little that was already there.
Yeah, it was utterly pointless. It would have been more interesting to have him play, or have the Doctor play the games, even, because the Doctor's the big mind, not Seaman and Dodo. Seaman and Dodo are just Seaman and Dodo. Like, you know.
They're smart, too.
I know, but they're not, like, the Doctor. The Doctor's, like,
yes,
you know.
Super smart.
They aren't the Doctor.
One last bit of trivia about that game the Doctor plays. Apparently, they gave that prop to Peter Purves. This is a thing that sounds not true, but I hope that I want it to be true. They gave that prop to Peter Purves, and then he was like looking for other acting roles, and he was not getting anything. And he became convinced that the prop was like cursed or something, or like, maybe not convinced, but like, there's just this idea that like, this prop is cursed. This is a bad luck prop. He gave it away after like 18 months and then got like a role the next day.
I believe it.
Wow.
That's canon.
But yeah, all along. Yeah. There's some stuff I liked in it.
It was blah, brand potato chips.
I would have liked to have seen, like, maybe a follow-up because I liked the actor. I feel like they could do something with that idea.
They did do some big finish with Celestial Toymaker. And apparently they wanted to bring him back with the Sixth Doctor on TV. But that ended up not happening, and instead they did Trial of the Time Lord.
He is in The Ten Doctors. Part of the reason, I think he's a major villain specifically because, I have to look it up, I'm not certain if this is true. I think he plays a fairly big role because the writer always felt that he was underutilized.
I think the story itself was meh, but the behind-the-scenes story is really interesting. Like, all this stuff of, like, you know, racism... legal disputes. We almost got rid of Hartnell on this serial. That's all kind of fascinating. Too bad the episode itself is just kind of meh. Maybe our next serial will be less than meh. We'll be coming back for The Gunfighters with Ray Friesen of rayfriesen.com. Any final things you want to say, Chris?
You already said final thoughts.
Any plugs or anything?
Season 1 of Brains is online. Go watch Season 1 of Brains and let us know if you would want to donate money to a Patreon for a season 2. Like, watch it. If you like it, be vocal about it.
See you next time. Bye!
Bye. I waved.
Yeah! One up to me.